we did, because we need it badly. They told me actually there were going to be all sorts of, yeah, they're, because they have more than one color of marker this year. Anyways, I want to welcome everybody, all kidding aside. If we could send a sheet, I guess, around, so we could get a sense of who's in the shir. If you could just put down where you've been, what your learning affiliation, I guess, has been for the last couple of years, and your name, how you prefer to be called, as the case may be. It's something that can change. You're not stuck, because you put your name on the sheet as Bartholomew or Windsor or whatever. You can change that in time, but it's always good to get off on the right foot. First of all, I don't know whether we should say Shechayanu or not, but it's a certain sense of excitement, I guess, that we start with a new room. The idea of a room, all things being equal, is a very instrumental idea. A room is just a place. It's just a means to accomplishing an end. In that sense, it shouldn't be, a source of great excitement. But in the world of halacha, obviously, means always matter. If you want to accomplish a certain goal, then the acoustics good? Can people hear me, by the way? You can hear? Okay, good. If not, we'll use Akiva's microphone. In the world of halacha, they say, means always matter because ends are created by proper means, which is why we have a concept of Kedushas Makom in addition to simply focusing on the end result. The extent to which the instrument accomplishes the goal in itself is a Davar Shebekedusha. And that's why there's a concept of Kedushas Beis HaMedrash and Kedushas Beis HaKnesses, etc. And therefore, when you begin in a new place, I think it's always important to pause and to appreciate. Referring back to the Parshas HaShavua, one is Chozer Me'orchei Al-Mulchama. If a person builds a house doesn't have the opportunity of Chinuch Habayis, surely that's not only because the great sense of excitement and anticipation for anything new. Things are always extremely appealing, when you haven't yet tasted them. So, this sense that, you put in so much effort and you haven't really, been able to reap the benefits is something that can be very disturbing, very depressing. So from that point of view, simply, a person who doesn't have that experience, bana bayis velo chanacho, is chozer baruch hamacham, he can't properly concentrate, if he's really focused on what he thinks is going to be this, tremendous experience. But I think more than that, the idea in chinuch really is an idea of initiation. And of course, we associate the idea of chinuch, with education. And that's because chinuch isn't just about realizing a certain anticipated excitement. It's not just about the novelty per se. It really is about tone setting, like real chinuch is, like education is. It's about laying foundations and structures. How you begin sometimes is very significant in terms of setting your goals and what values you implement to achieve them, etc. So I think that's also one of the reasons why Bana Bayis Velo Chanacho is Chozer Me'orchei Mulchama, not just because in fact he can't focus and concentrate, but that we really do see the tremendous value in chinuch and chinuch of a makom itself. So it's in that sense that I guess we begin in a new place. I was in the other room in what was our number? 313?
Yeah.
313. So for many, many, many years, and personally I have really a lot of nostalgic and excellent special memories of Talmidim and experiences. And nostalgia is a good thing, and creating new memories is a good thing as well. So I just want to welcome everybody, I guess, to the new building and especially to the new shear room. I think it'll take a while till we figure out exactly all the nuances. I can't see Jesse, but I know he must be here somewhere. There's Jesse. So do we have no access?
I don't see a computer.
Really?
Yeah, I'm projected. No computer.
So what does it project? Okay, I think it could be that it's just they're still in the bana stage, and it's maybe pre chanachal. So, but I think it's supposed to be one in here. So hopefully, I have access to that, and maybe there's some other technological benefits that we'll be able to enjoy as well. Either way, so we just want to welcome everybody. The list should be going around. I say it helps me know everybody, and we'll call the list so that everybody can learn everybody's names, and I can learn the names of the new people. Anybody who's new should feel comfortable coming over to me and telling me your name, as many times as it takes. We're going to try to set up, again, little meetings so we can get to know the new people first, but everybody else also. In the next, week or so, we'll try to coordinate. I also want to thank in advance, I see Yosef is in the back there. There he is. Yosef Bronstein and Yoni Chambre. Yoni is returning after a year hiatus, and then Yosef is new in the position, but both consented to be, to do the Chazar Shir and to help me, in the running of things. They'll be helpful to you in setting up chavrusas and any other issues that come up. So I want to thank them in advance. Yoni, we know already did a great job a couple of years ago. Yosef, we know will do. Both veterans of this year, so again, anybody new especially who has questions, issues, they're the people to see. You can see there are many other senior people around the room as well. And of course, you should always feel free to come over to me. But in terms of Chabrusa, certainly any issues, you should come to me. I want you to come to me. I look forward to getting to know the new people better. If anybody needs Chabrusas again, you should see Yosef and Yoni. And again, if there are issues, let me know. In terms of Svarim, we'll have Jesse up and running, so that'll be good for the shiur itself, but obviously that's no substitute for your preparation. There's a wide range of Rishonim on Baba Basra, the things that I'm aware of at least. The regular, Chachmei Svarad, we have, pretty much the full gamut. In addition to the normal things, there's the Rabbeinu Yonah you should have access to. I have two volumes. I assume it's pretty much out there. I assume you'll let me know if it's not. The Yad Ramah and Baba Basra is also obviously something you don't have in every Masechta, so you should have access to that. There's a newer, better critical edition that was put out some years ago. Might be better to have access to that. There's a Rimigash on Baba Basra, which also is not typical of every Masechta, so it's important to have that. Recently they put out, about 10 years ago or so, I guess, the equivalent of an Otsar Agonim on the first three prakim of Baba Basra. I think it's called Ginzei HaGaonim. That's something that's good to have access to. Again, it overlaps many other things. The Shir actually brought me, gave as a present at the end of last year, the Shitas Kamoi, which overlaps with a lot of other things, but has a lot of the more specialty, I guess, Rishonim. So that's a good thing to have access to. It has a lot of material. I haven't had a chance yet to fully plumb its depths, but it's probably a good safer to have. There's a Likud Rishonim on Baba Basra, Chelek Aleph, as far as I know. I don't know if they ever put out Chelek Beis. Have they ever put out Chelek Beis? Akiva hasn't seen it, so I don't know. If there is a Chelek Beis, either way, it doesn't affect us, but Chelek Aleph does affect Chesek Sabbatim. Like all the other Likud Rishonims, it's it's a good resource to have. Sometimes the Sheilos HaTshuvos that deal with the topic have additional insights. I think I already put one or two on the Mar Makomos, Tshuvas HaRajba, Tshuvas HaRan. So that's a good thing to have. Of course, the Shita Mekubetzes and Baba Basra. Mostly the Rishonim I mentioned are accessible, but it's always here and there there's something in the Shita Mekubetzes that doesn't appear in the others, and some of the anonymous material, 14th 15th century material. There isn't as much of it as there is in Ksuvas and Baba Metzia, but again, obviously, it's good to have access to the Shita Mekubetzes, and it's always a crowd favorite. I'll give you the pages and column numbers of the oldest edition that exists and that no one has anymore. that way we'll keep it alive. In terms of the schedule, everybody knows the base schedule. We shifted a couple of years ago to 3 days a week shiur. I think we're going to continue with that. So mostly it'll be Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday. Monday we'll try to have Ashkafa. I think the first semester last year we were pretty successful. The second semester, you know, there ended up being a lot of other things going on, so we weren't that successful. We'll try again to emulate the first semester, you know, for both semesters this year. I'm open to topics. I think I saw Willie somewhere. Where's Willie? Willie, you know, ended. It turns out that Willie's suggestion, you know, dominated the first semester last year. We did like a portrait of Avraham Avinu, as I recall, and some of the Avos. Other years we've done Pirkei Avos or Yud Gimel Ikarim. I'm open to suggestion. There can be specific topics that you want to speak about. I'm open to that as well. So we'll try to do that mostly on Mondays. Chazar Shir is on Wednesday, right? Usually at 1 o'clock, and probably I'm guessing that Yosef and Yoni will be switching off. That's a good thing, especially for the guys coming in, and even otherwise, you know, they'll both put effort into it, and it helps after, you know, several days to gain a bigger perspective of the topic. So I recommend that highly. And that's pretty much it. In terms of the topics, we're about to begin from the beginning of Cheskes Habatim, but, you know, people shouldn't be too worried about that. I know people really, you know, anticipate and would be upset if we didn't have some sort of Hakdama. So we will have Hakdama, but the Hakdama is going to be rooted mostly in the Perek. That's simply the nature of what we have. So we're going to start with Cheskes Gimel Shanim. The Perek is a very rich Perek. Everybody knows Cheskes Habatim is one of those prakim that they you know, they call it a Shas Perek, because it's all over the place in terms of you know, significance for Choshen Mishpat, the topics, and Dine Mamonos. And that's a tremendous appeal of Perek Cheskes Habatim. However, what we're going to do in the Hakdama is zero in on the Cheskes Gimel Shanim topic. So we're going to jump around a little bit, just reorganize the parak a little bit to do that. And then we'll come back, once we finish with that, then we'll come back and fill in and go straight in terms of the, you know, the bigger Shas issues that are discussed in the parak. So we're going to start with Cheskes Gimel Shanim. I gave already some Marmakomos. We'll be adding to them. We'll start with Cheskes Gimel Shanim. We're also going to be discussing just the main topics that you want to keep an eye open. There's an overlap, obviously, between these topics, but Cheskes Gimel Shanim, and then, of course, the question of Godros, which is the Gemara in Lamed, Vav, Amud Aleph. I already gave you a little to look at on that. Then we're going to discuss also the question of Mecha'a. How do you build a Chazaka, and how do you undermine a Chazaka? Obviously, those are two sides of the same coin. The topics of Mecha'a already come up on Chav Ches Amud Beis and Chav Tes Amud Aleph, which we're going to read today. But the main sugyas, of course, are on Lamed Ches through Mem. So we're going to, you know, just take a couple of days and just do Lamed Ches through Mem before we end up doing Lamed Beis and Lamed Gimel, Lamed Aleph, etc. We're also going to discuss a little bit of the concept of Taina, Chazaka Sheishim Ataina. So that's the sugya later on. On Mem Aleph and Mem Beis, the Mishnah on Mem Aleph and Aleph in particular. In addition to that, we're also going to discuss Cheskes Tashmishim. Again, I already gave you a Makar on the Balamor and Ramban on Vav Mud Beis, but this is an issue that comes up a number of times on Mem Aleph and Aleph in the Mishnah, at least according to the Rashbam. And then the end of the Perek really deals with Cheskes Tashmishim. It may also be connected to the issue of Chazaka Sheishim Ataina. That's why the Rashbam brings it in on Mem Aleph and Aleph. So Cheskes Tashmishim is a foil for Cheskes Gimel Shanim. It's an important topic. Tvisas Metaltalin is obviously in the background of Cheskes Karka. We're going to speak about that a little bit today, but we'll probably wait till Godros to, you know, to finish off the topic. Avadim and Godros are part of that issue. And then we're also going to speak a little bit about the relationship between Chazaka and Shtar. You know, if you have a Shtar, can you still use Chazaka? To what extent the Chazaka is a replacement, but really is viewed as kind of like a virtual Shtar, right? Virtual Shtar or a digital Shtar. Where's Itamar? Somewhere here. Itamar is here? There he is. Okay. virtual or digital, which, as we know, are right two totally different things, as we established last year. So is there really such a notion as either a digital or a virtual? Are those two possibilities in understanding Chazaka? So that's a topic. Efshelavar, Tzorach Levar, that's the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Gemara Nedav Basra, Kuf Samach Tes, and Sanhedrin, Kuf Gimel Kuf Dalid. We'll speak about that. And those are pretty much the topics that we're going to be starting with. If we can do them quickly, because they're all interconnected, that'll be the best. And if we can get it done before the break, and Yontif, finish up the Cheskes Gimel Shanim topics, that would be really very much of an accomplishment. So we'll strive for it. And then after that, we'll just go straight. As I said, the topics are very rich in Cheskes Sabbat. Okay. Any questions before we actually begin? Yeah.
Can I speak up a little bit?
Sure. I can try. Yeah. Okay. Or I can use, if it's really a problem, I'll use the microphone. But for right now, I'll try to speak up. But thank you for mentioning it, and let me know if you need more. Okay, since Sam volunteered, maybe we'll have him read the Mishnah so we can get started. Again, today's shiur obviously is going to be a little shorter than usual. We have some little hakdama to the hakdama, but we'll start again. The next shiur will be, of course, on Sunday, and Monday we'll do something in Hashkafa. But we'll start try to get Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday. We'll try to get that established. Okay. Sam, go ahead. Okay. So what stands out in this list? Avadim. So immediately we're struck by the inclusion of Avadim. Everything else is a landed property, right? The real estate, immovable. And the only thing that's not, of course, is avadim. It's hard to pick up a piece of karka. Hence, maybe that might be connected with the concept of cheskas gimel shanim. An eved is not metaltalin, but it's also not karka. So the inclusion of avadim in the Mishnah is something worth noting. It's something that the Rishonim already noted. We'll discuss that more fully when we talk about Godros, but we'll make allusions along the way. The Rajba and the Ritva Alatar immediately bring up the inclusion of Avadim in the Mishnah. There's something that's absent in the Mishnah, especially in light of the fact that Avadim are in the Mishnah. What's Ezra? What's missing in the Mishnah? You'd have to know some background a little bit. But if Avadim are there already, if Avadim weren't there, then this wouldn't be missing. But if Avadim are already there, so what's missing in the Mishnah? No, that's an interesting point. I mean, just like Avadim, there's a category of things that are kind of in between Avadim, in between Karka and Betaltilin, like Anavim, Omdos, Libatzer, and things of that sort. You know, what would be their status in terms of Cheskas Gimel Shanim? Okay, that's a good point. That's something to look at. That's a little more of a specialty kind of a case, but in Achanami, that's something that we would look at. We probably wouldn't be so upset that it was missing in the Mishnah, but it's definitely, raises the question. No question about that. What's missing in the Mishnah? Yeah.
I'm not sure if this count could be naturally hoshu or kakot, like Avadim are, but behemos.
Behemos, correct. Which do you have a name for that in halacha? We're just calling behemos. Seems so. Or anything more?
We got all the clocks to make a mikneh.
What do you can think of?
Mikneh.
Okay, that's a Tanakh answer, but that's not a. What do we call them in the context of this parak? Godros, right? The question is whether Godros is only Avadim or Godros is are behemos, but correct. So what about Godros? Godros ein lem chazaka miyad, we know that. That's the Gemara, and hopefully you've seen already. That's the discussion of the Gemara in Lamed Vav. There's a debate among the Rishonim whether or not, we'll be discussing this, obviously more fully, whether or not Godros, yesh lem chazaka, ein lem chazaka la'alter, yesh lem chazaka la'achar, gimel shanim, or not. if you take the view that Godros ein lem chazaka klal, right, there's nothing you can do ever to establish a chazaka in Godros, meaning if you have a shtar or edim, you can always prove that you own Godros, but never through the means of a chazaka. So then the omission from this Mishnah in the beginning of Cheskes Habatim is totally understandable. If, on the other hand, Godros, like Avadim, ein lem chazaka la'alter, but yesh lem chazaka la'achar gil Rishonim, and this is a major debate in the Rishonim, if that's true, so then the fact that Avadim are included in the Mishnah and Godros are not is at least something to note. Again, you might say, oh, Avadim hukshu l'karkos, you know, and maybe it shouldn't have been there if not for that. Or, you know, Godros are just, generally speaking, metaltalin. There are different ways to answer the question. Some of the answers will basically neutralize the question fully, meaning, you know, the assumption of the question is not all that difficult. But it's at least conceivable that by focusing on the omission of Godros and the inclusion of Avadim, that we might conclude that there are more than one form, there is more than one form of Cheskas Gimel Shanim. And that not all Cheskas Gimel Shanim or Chazaka La'achar Gimel are identical. Okay. So that's something to look at. The truth is that that may be something to look at even Karka versus Avadim. But certainly, when we consider another possibility, another case, Godros. So the omission, the inclusion of Avadim, the omission of Godros, if Yeshlem Chazak Alachar Gimel, is something to note. Okay, let's continue for the moment. Sam, go ahead. Okay, so what do we have? What's worth noting here? So once we have, again, the simple reading of the Mishnah till this point is that Cheskas Gimel Shanim is a time frame, right? And then what happens? Then the Mishnah transitions right, which basically establishes that Cheskas Gimel Shanim is not necessarily about time, it's about achilos, or activities, right? Maisim, right? Achila is the particular maisa, but the category is maisim. So the question is this significant in terms of the nature of Cheskas Gimel Shanim? Does everybody agree with these Tanayim in the Mishnah? We have, again, a debate, you know, what exactly the details are. Rabbi Ishmael, Rabbi Akiva, right? Differences between Ste'alava and Ste'abal, but basically the principle seems to be the same, namely that Achilos or Maisim rather than Zman is Koveya. What we'll see later on in the Gemara is that it seems that at least it's very possible that the Chachamim reject this whole idea, that for the Chachamim, time rather than actions count. Indeed, Tosus already on Chavtes Amin Aleph, I don't know if you got through that. We only gave it the Marma Kofas yesterday. People came back lessons, I don't know. But which Tosus am I talking about? Tosus already makes reference to this issue. Sam?
I think it's the first Tosus
on Chavtes Amin Aleph. Mm-hmm. Correct? Tosus there just has a comment that, again, we'll get to the details in a moment, but if you want to try to coordinate. Yeah. If you want to try to coordinate, Tosa says, we'll get back to this, Hocheusha and you know, some of the Gemaras on Chavtes Amin Aleph, the two views of Rava on Chavtes Amin Aleph, we'll read them in just a minute. So you should know that there seems to be an important difference, namely, is Cheskas Gimel Shanim about time, or is Cheskas Gimel Shanim about Maisim? Okay, so we'll have to discuss the parameters of that. This question whether Cheskas Gimel Shanim is about time, can you hear me in the back now? Yeah? Okay. If Cheskas Gimel Shanim is about time, or whether it's about the activities, is something that needs to be analyzed in its own right. Namely, it could be that it's just a technical question. However Cheskas Habatim work, however Cheskas Gimel Shanim work, the agreed upon single vision of how Cheskas Gimel Shanim works So within that, there is a debate about implementing that agreed upon vision, right? Is it something that depends on time, or is it something that depends on activities? For example, if we were to take one of the models, which is that what's important about Cheskes Gimel Shanim is the response of the Ma'arer, right? How he responds. So is that something that you gauge in terms of time, his silence over a period of time, or is it something that you gauge, that you assess in terms of his silence, in terms of provocative activities, right? Assuming that he knows about them and that the time isn't, is it over time his silence, or is it, you know, in the face of provocative actions, again, with the assumption that he knows about them. So if that's the case, so then the argument about time versus activities is really a technical argument. You still need to know the halacha, you know, what the psak is. And that's, you know, where you get into what the Chachamim's view is and how we paskin, and so on and so forth. But the stakes are going to be less high. Or is this question gufa, whether or not this is a problem of time or a problem of responding to actions, or maybe not responding to actions, but the actions themselves, which we'll get to, the activity itself, three significant acts of haraz bailus, let's say, right, is what constitutes a chazaka. So then it's not about time, it's about activities. So this argument of time versus actions will have to be, we'll have to return to this. Okay, we'll see how that coordinates again with Holkeyusha and with the other deities. Okay, so that is the, that's the Mishnah. So the Mishnah already raises certain intriguing questions, and there are more issues to discuss as well. The Perek as a whole, I told you to get you know, kind of a general survey of the Mishnayos, deals not only with Cheskes Gimel Shanim, but with two other topics. Jay, did you get a chance to look at the Mishnayos just very quickly?
Aside from the Chazak Sheni Matayna, but towards the end of the
book. What is that? What would you call it? Chazak Sheni Matayna. What are they?
What are the appropriate, the necessary times you need to uphold the Chazak?
Oh, you mean the Taina? Oh, you're saying Chazak Sheyeshim. What is a Taina that constitutes? Okay, but that's a condition in Cheskes Gimel Shanim,
right,
clearly.
Right,
I'm just
saying
the Perek deals really with three, if you just look at the Mishnayos, with three topics. It starts with, and primarily, you know, focuses on Cheskes Gimel Shanim. Right? What else is included in the Perek? Let's call it Cheskes Tashmishim. Right? That's certainly the end of the Perek, deals with Cheskes Tashmishim. Now, Cheskes Tashmishim is quite different, right? It's not a dispute about ownership, right, and evidence of ownership. It's a question of, you know, the conditions in which a person allows others to use his property, Cheskes Tashmishim, or in some cases, Cheskes Heter Nezakin, right, including issues like Hezek Ria. So we're going to discuss that. It's interesting to note that those issues, of course, come up in the beginning of the Masechta, the first Perek, but the Mishnayos in the end of the third Perek deal with them as well, raising the question, Cheskas, you know, Raya of a Kenyan, and Cheskas Tashmishim are just common in terms of name, or conceptually there is a link between them. The issue comes to a head, right, when you examine the requirements of Cheskas Tashmishim vis-a-vis Cheskas Gimel Shanim, including the question of, Jay, which question? Taina, right, do you need a Taina in Cheskes Tashmishim? And the question of timing, is there a din of Gimel Shanim in Cheskes Tashmishim? We'll discuss, as I mentioned, we'll discuss that that issue. But depending on whether or not the overlap, how significant is the overlap between Cheskes Gimel Shanim and Cheskes Tashmishim, that would be potentially important for both topics. If the overlap is more minimal, right, we might argue that really Hailuchu Dekoi v'Hailuchu Dekoi, these are two totally different dinim. One is a din in the Rambam, Meduchas Toin V'Nitan, The other is a din in Hilchos Shcheinim, and never the twain shall meet. Basically, the only overlap is in the terminology, or maybe technically, in terms of the Maisa Chazaka, although the impact of that Maisa Chazaka is just totally different in these two different contexts. So the presence of Cheskas Tashmishim in the Perek is something that we have to keep an eye on in terms of Cheskas Gimel Shanim. We'll analyze again the details as going forward. What else is mentioned in the Perek? In addition to Cheskas Tashmishim? Ellie?
Cheskas
Kinyan, exactly. Kinyan Chazaka. Here we start off the mission with Raya's Chazaka. Right? The other topic in this Perek is Kinyan Chazaka. Where does it appear in the Mishnah? Mem. Was it Mem base? Mem base with Aleph, right? You have Umdin Ashut from Arisan Apotropim Elam Chazaka. And so on. Lo Ish Bin Ichse Ishta, Lo Ab Bin Ichse Ben, all of which we'll discuss. Then at the end of the Mishnah, you have, go ahead. Aval. Yep. So what is that?
Sounds like a cheskas. Like you do something like a demonstration of ownership and then you make.
That's kinyan chazak. Okay, so in the Mishnah, which is actually excluding certain cases of cheskas raya, in the end of the Mishnah brings in cheskas kinyan. Now, one way to look at that is, you know, to again, you know, to perceive it as being extremely unimportant, totally innocuous. Because the Mishnah tells us that Umanim and Arisim and so on don't have Cheskas Gimel Shanim because of the, you know, inherent connection that they have to the land anyway, you know, which undermines Machzik Mokid Mechazki Inshi in terms of being, you know, bailus significant. So the Mishnah tells us, however, that's true, just because they don't have Raya's Chazaka, don't think that that means that they're excluded from everything with the name Chazaka. Of course, they could have a kinyan chazaka, which operates through das makne. If you choose to give a matana or to sell a property to an uman and an aris and a baal and a ben and so on, through kinyan chazaka, of course, that works. So one way to look at the Mishnah is that the Mishnah is trying to dispel and to preclude misconception, but that basically there is no inherent or fundamental link between kinyan chazaka and Raya's Chazaka. Or does the fact that the Mishnah felt the need to contrast, is that because the connection between Kinyan Chazaka and Raya's Chazaka is more than just name only? It could be name only, in which case it's totally meaningless. It could be that there's an overlap in what constitutes a Maisa Chazaka, some sort of Horaz Bailus, albeit again, like we said in Cheskas Tashmishim, the context really drives why we care about that kind of activity, that kind of action. And really there is no conceptual overlap other than, you know, that common denominator, which is more than a name, but not so much more than a name. But of course, the third possibility, the one that's more intriguing, both as it was with Cheskas Tashmishim, is that despite the differences, despite the fact that one is a Hilchos Toin V'Nitan Halacha, and Cheskas Tashmishim is a Shcheinim Halacha. And where's Kinyan Chazaka to be found? Kinyan Chazaka? Stephen? Hilchos Mechira, correct. Mechira, and it's also somewhat in Zechiyah Matana, namely in Sefer Kinyan. The fact that these are in different contexts, clearly, and that there are important differences between them, shouldn't obscure the fact that there is a conceptual overlap too. The reason that one can be koneh b'derech chazaka is important to the way which chazaka accomplishes its raya as well. So, for example, there are a few cases in the Gemara where there seems to be discussion in the Rishonim, you know, whether those cases are talking about kinyan chazaka or raya's chazaka. Particularly, anybody know which one? Ariel?
Son of a Mayakan.
Yeah. Where is that?
Of Tesla
and Base. What else?
Lamed
Hayim and Base, right? Which is, what's that Gemara about? Tzana de Peiri. Yeah. So again, Chav Tesla Base is one Gemara. Very good. And Lamed Hayim and Base is another one. Lamed Hayim and Base was on the Mar Makomos, so that was certainly a legitimate question. Again, the Rambam quotes the Gemara on Lamed Hayim and Base where? In some cases, the Rambam has both, right? Hilchos Mechira and Hilchos Toin Benita. Now, again, it could be that that's because there's an overlap, there's a common denominator, right? Namely, the the concept of Haraz Bailus based on Maisa Chazaka. But it's quite possible that there is more of a substantive connection as well. The Ritva on the Mishnah here starts off by noting, again, we'll have a chance to analyze it more fully, that he starts off by mentioning the distinction between Cheskas Kinyan and Cheskas Raya, and analyzing a little bit whether or not they are one and the same or not. In the Sefer Mekach HaMemkar of Rav Haigon, right, he talks about different chazakos. It sounds like he thinks that the link between these topics is more than a name only. And that's true from some of the other gaonim as well. So the question of kinyan chazaka as opposed to raya's chazaka is something to consider as well. Okay, that's just in terms of reading the Mishnah. Already there are several things that that cry out in terms of discussion. Good. The real background of the Mishnah is the unstated but omnipresent contrast with first name is Sam Metaltel. Meaning, just explain a little bit more. Exactly. In Metaltalin, you wouldn't need Gimel Shanim, there would be a Chazaka La'alte. So, basically, this Mishnah is meant to be a contrast to Metaltalin. The question is how to navigate that idea. Why is it that Metaltalin is Chazaka La'alte, just by means of the Tfisa? And in Cheskas Karka, right, you need this whole elaborate, whether it's time or it's maisim, why do you need this whole elaborate mechanism? So that, of course, requires particular attention, and then several different ways. Number one, it's implicit in the Mishnah, but it's also explicit in certain Gemaras. I told you to look at the Gemara in Shavua Staf, Mem Vav Amud Beis. There are a few other Gemaras as well. If you look at the Magid Mishnah, Parches Hilchos, Toin Venitan Halacha Aleph, the Magid Mishnah notes what he thinks are some of the Gemaras that clearly indicate that Metaltalin has an immediate Tfisa. So the Gemara in Shavuos Daf Mem Vav Amud Beis is particularly important. They're the contrast between Dvarim Asuim Lahashil Lahaskir and regular Metaltalin. That emerges from that Gemara. But in addition to that, the Gemara there has an important line. I don't know if you guys had a chance to see it already. A very important line. Why is it that Metaltalin requires nothing more than Tfisa? Yeah. Well, okay. I mean, normally we describe it that way. Chazaka kol ma'ashir v'ad reish shelo. The Gemara there has, in Shavuos, has another formulation about why that's so. Question whether Chazaka Koma Shonim Reyu Shalo Achzuke Inshi Beganvi Lo Mechazkina. Why is that different than Chazaka? Well, again, Chazaka Koma Shonim Tachas Yadonim Reyu Shalo, one could have said is just a description of the result. It's not an explanation of why it's so. I'm not sure that that's true. I think it's more likely that it also projects a certain idea. But either way, achzuke inshi beganvi lo mechazkinan is certainly a kind of obdana, rubidaleisa kaman, whatever you want to call it, a kind of chazaka. It's important because in Metalkal, and again we'll analyze this more fully in Godros, but it's going to come up in the contrast to Gimel Shanim right away. What is it about Metalkal that allows for this immediate transition? So one could have said this is simply based on, you know, a broader rule called Motzi Mechavero Alavaraya. Right? No one will deny that in the case of Metalkal, you're trying to be Motzi. In Karka, right, it's a little more difficult because since there's no physical tvisa, you know, my being on the karka is not necessarily any different than your being on the karka. You know, it's my relationship to the karka that's different. It's who controls the karka, but it, obviously you don't have the same kind of notion of actual tvisa. So it's harder to say about physical motzi mechaver levaraya in karka than it is in metaltlin. So one could have said that what's unique about metaltlin is simply the reality of the physical control, which determines motzi mechaver levaraya. And motzi mechaver levaraya is largely an issue about resolving sfeikos, and it's largely an issue of status quo. Right? Mostly we don't think that, again, this is an issue which we'll talk about, but mostly we don't think that if, because something is in someone's possession, necessarily that means per se that it's more likely that they own it. The words motzi mechaver levaraya may, in its minimal application, signify that you're not going to make a change. You know, bishev baltasa, you're going to leave things as they are. By saying achzuke inshi beganvi lo mechaskinan, the Gemara in Shavuos seems to be saying that in addition to motzi mechavero alavaraya of status quo, right, of shev baltasa versus kumbase, there's also a positive reason to be thinking that when somebody is holding on to an object, that it's his. So it isn't just Sheva Al Tasa. That's what's important about it. The implication is that if all we had was Motzi Mechavero Olivaraya, then there might be some limit in applying this idea of an immediate Tvisa. We would still probably apply Motzi Mechavero Olivaraya, but it might be somewhat more limited. So Aksuke Inshi Beganvi Lo Mechazkinan is an important additional factor. Is it possible that that's more than simply a raya or an added chazaka? Maybe it means what I think Sam was getting at. Chazaka kol masha tachas yadadim areyu shalo, not just because, you know, if you took a poll, most people with betaltlan in their hands are not gazlanim, but because the tfisa itself is a strong raya that they're not gazlanim. Something along the lines of, you know, again, the, you know, in secular law, they, you know, people are fond of saying, you know, like possession, you know, is 9/10 of the law. So I think it's a big deal in there too, although I'm far from being a lawyer. We have any lawyers in the room? No? Okay, that's good. you know, there too, it's a question whether that means nothing more than, you know, motzi mechaver levaraya, the burden of proof, the onus is to prove that, you know, that it's not where it is. You want to create a change, so you have to demonstrate, you know, you have to rationalize change. But definitely, you know, some understandings of it is that, you know, possession is a kind of bailus. And not just a raya for bailus, but it is, in a vacuum, possession is bailus. And that's an important question in Metaltalin too. Do we only mean Motzi Mechaver Levaraya? Do we only mean the, let's say, more limited idea of Aksuke Inshi Begazlanusa Lo Mechazkinan? And if we do mean that, so why isn't that true for Karka? Let's say guys, most, let's say you took a poll and you figured out that most people who control a piece of Karka are honest, you know, upstanding citizen, or, you know, maybe that's too ambitious. They're not gazlanim, at least. So why wouldn't you apply an immediate kazaka, you know, to karka? Or by saying achzuke inshid begazalus alom mechazkinan, do we really mean to say that it's not just a kind of an extraneous pole, but that the tvisa itself, you know, establishes a certain quasi bilus? Now, there are limits to what that means, obviously, and how that applies. If we know for a fact that a person took the object from someone else, if he doesn't have a taina at all, then obviously the other fellow is a marakama and he has a taina, and this fellow is, you know, not admits that he has no taina. That might be one situation. The question is more in, you know, this more ambiguous situations where it's not so clear. He might have a taina, he's not sharing it with us. Again, we'll discuss some of these cases. You have a marakama, clearly, and you have, you know, a present toface. And he doesn't say, I picked it up from the street, or it was hefker, it was never owned by anyone, but he doesn't tell you exactly, he doesn't feel that he's obligated to tell you how he came into possession of this object. So under those conditions, do we always say about metalton that there's tfisa, or just more so than karka? And if so, what is the legal relationship between karka and metalton? Would we normally say that even in karka there is tfisa? Which is the exception, which is the rule? But for other factors, again, we're speaking very abstractly now. When we get to the details, you'll see that all these issues are really very concrete in the Lashonos of Rishonim and in actual concrete Nafkamina. Just speaking aloud, just the things that come up just when you read the Mishnah and the things to look out for. So one possibility is that Karka is just an anomaly of Metalfalin, and you have to explain why that's so. And we'll get to that. Or maybe Metalfalin is the anomaly. Right, the exception is metalfalin, because of this power of tvisa or this special chazaka, which for some reason you don't have in parallel in karka. Or is there just a fundamental difference? There's no exception and there's no rule. The reason that makes metalfalin a natural tvisa just doesn't apply to karka in a fundamental way. This is something that I'm going to be suggesting quite a bit, so let me just throw it out already now. Is it possible that the difference between karka and metalfalin in the context of Raya's Chazaka is part of not just a narrow story about the conditions of Raya and the obstacles of karka and the possible, you know, benefits, let's say, of tvisas metalfalin, but that this is really part of a much bigger story, differences between karka and metalfalin across the board. We know that, you know, when it comes to onah, and when it comes to shavua, and when it comes to shmira, and when it comes to gzela, when it comes to many things, we distinguish between karka and metalfalin. When it comes to darke kinyanim, we distinguish between karka and metalton. Right? Metalton is nikneh, these are Baba Basra sugyas in the middle, prakim, right? The, you know, meshicha and hagbah and mesira, right? None of these apply to karka. Karka is nikneh b'chazaka and b'shtar and b'kesef, right? Chazaka and shtar certainly don't apply to metalton. As for kesef, right, Dvar Torah Mos Konos, Machlokas actually Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, whether Dvar Torah Mos is Konos or not, but even though we paskin mostly Dvar Torah Mos Konos, is there a difference between the Kinyan Moos of Metalfalin and the Kinyan Kesef of Karka? Again, a couple of years back we learned a Kiddushin, some people were here for that Limud, we discussed that at some length in the context of Mekadish B'milva and Kinyanim B'milva, etc. So even where there's an overlap between the two, in Kesef or Mos, if they are both applicable, there might be differences. So do these distinctions between Karka and Metalfalin, you know, broadly speaking, do they have anything to do with the distinction here when it comes to Rayas Chazak? And if so, how? In which case, if they do, it's not a question of exception and rule. It's not that everything should be like Metaltalin, but. Or everything should be like Karka, but. Right? Everything should be like Metaltalin means that it's artificial that we have to wait 3 years for Karka. We'll have to explain what the artificial obstacle is. Right? Everything really should be like Karka, and it's artificial that Metaltalin is Miyad because of what we said before, maybe Aksuke Begazlanusalo Mechazkinan or Motsu Mechabero Olivaraya, but otherwise, no. What I'm suggesting now is it's natural that Tfisa applies to Metaltalin, and, you know, for reasons that are very basic, that we consider that to be like almost a quasi bailus, as long as there's a taina and things that go along with it. And it's very natural that when it comes to karka, that we don't have this kind of never mind immediate, but, you know, it's a different way that you establish a relationship with a piece of karka, which is li'ola momades, and has this, you know, just different, you just look at karka differently than metaltalin. Metaltalin is something, what I'm basically suggesting, metaltalin is something that can be, you know, looked at in time in a narrow way. It bilus over metaltalin can be looked at in a certain way, whereas a karka is something which you have both a more peripheral, let's say, and a more profound a relationship at the same time. Okay. To create the more profound relationship, you have to overcome the obstacles that make it initially a more peripheral relationship. The karka is going to be there long after you. The karka can never be completely, you know, dominated, you know, by you. You can't pick it up. You know, karka li'olam amades. For the same reason, in other words, this is the suggestion which we'll be elaborating, for the same reason that, you know, it's hard to put a price on a piece of karka in the same way that it is in metaltalin, because you just have a different vision about karka. Right? Karka, you know, is a legacy. Karka belongs to the world, you know, and you can have a relationship with it. But that just makes it totally different than, you know, the more ephemeral, temporary, but dominatable metaltalin. At the same time, when you do actually establish a relationship with a piece of karka, that's what I meant by it being more peripheral and also more profound, you know, when you take the steps necessary to do that, it becomes like more of a legacy, more something that is al shemecha. So is it possible that the distinction between karka and metaltalin are connected to that as well? Of course, avadim, and what Ezra mentioned before, anavim omdos libatzer, are good test cases for this issue. As we know, avadim, you know, is somewhere in between karka and metaltalin. When it comes to gzela, for example, again, we learned about Vakama a couple of years back, Maruba, right? So there's the principle of karkain and exelus applies to avadim, right? Shinui kona doesn't apply to avadim. On the other hand, you can have a maisa gzela on avadim, quite possibly. There's yesh yirush avadim, according to the Rambam. They're just trying to illustrate it. Last year we talked about some of these issues as well, the context of Gittin and Otitznaku of other things. 2 years ago, those who were here in Chulin, we talked about it as well. Avadim, you know, may be karka, but it's not, to use Ramosha Soloveitchik's term, it may be karka, but it's not mechubar. So the status of avadim and anavim omdos libatzer, which I hope we will get a chance to discuss more fully in its own right in this parak, would be relevant to this issue, both the technical issues and obstacles and the conceptual question of the nature of karka, the nature of metaltalin, etc. This would also raise an interesting question. What about those cases of metaltalin where there is no immediate tfisa? What am I talking about? Where is there no immediate tfisa in metaltalin? Is it Ari?
What's your name?
Yoni, I'm sorry. Pasternak, right?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
Dvar Masuim Lishael
would be one great case. What else?
Dvar Masuim Haskin.
Well, Asui Nahashil and Nahaskar are the same for this purposes, right? Meaning, so that's one. There's no yeah. What's your name, by the way?
Yeshua
Blumenkopf. Ah, we met last year too, right?
Yeah.
Okay. What did you say? Godros. Exactly. So Godros, assuming that there is a Chazaka Lachar Gimel, so what would be the relationship between the dynamic of Cheskas Gimel Shanim, let's say, on the one hand, and Metaltalin that require more time, if indeed there is a Chazaka at all, like Godros, like Aslim Lahash Lahaskir, etc. Would we end up with the situation, just as I'm essentially asking about Avadim, where superficially, you know, if you're just asking the question Alter or Gimel Shanim, you end up with a parallel between, you know, if they're all Gimel Shanim, so you throw them all together. But it's quite possible that the unique characteristic, let's say, of Karka versus Metaltalin, if that what's Koveya, that you'll have more than one model of Gimel Shanim, which goes to the question of what we noticed in the Mishnah. Maybe might be an answer to the question that we raised in the Mishnah. How can the Mishnah speaks about Avadim but doesn't speak about Godros if you assume that Godros has Gimel Shanim? Again, there might be other ways to explain this too, but the point is that Metaltalin, which are Lach and Gimel Shanim, are they the equivalent? What have they accomplished with their Gimel Shanim as opposed to Metaltalin Alter? Does it just take longer to get there? Is it a different idea? And what is the relationship that they have with Cheskas Karka? So these are some of the issues, just reading the Mishnah and thinking about, you know, the Mishnah, other Mishnahis in the Perek. These are some of the issues that we want to explore, and we'll be zeroing in on them more fully. So let's just start, just let's get the Gemara in first to Chavtes and Aleph. The Gemara here presents essentially like three different, seemingly three different models. And what we're going to figure out is, you know, to analyze these models more carefully in terms of the Rishonim. Are they three? Are they one? Are they two? Are they five? What exactly are they? How do they affect the issues that we're raising here? Okay, so let's have Ori. You want to? I remember last year we got you on the first day, right?
Well,
it was the second day. Okay. So I'm already ahead of the game. Okay. And Ori got some mazel tov because he's a new person since the last time that we saw him. So, okay.
אמר יוחנן שמעתי מלוך ירושה שהיו אומרים מניין לחזקה גימו שנים מישהו רמוע משהו רמוע כיוון שנה גימו נגיחוס נאפה במחס חסתה מכמה ימחס חזגוע הכנה מכיוון דאחו עצמס שני נאפה במרשוס מוכר וכאן גבר שוס גולקיה.
Yeah. So this, of course, how would you characterize this, Ori?
Strange.
Correct. Who says it? Besides from Ori. Even if you said it on your own, I would agree with you. Let me just get that in for the record. Both because of your, you know, personal authority and because I just happen to agree with you. But it's always better when, you know, when we don't just think it's strange, but, you know, authoritative people think it's strange. Who says it's strange? That's correct. Who have you seen?
Rashi.
Rashi. Okay, Rashi didn't say it was strange. Okay, yeah? What's your name? Zev. Okay. The who?
Ritva.
The Ritva says it's strange. Does the Ritva say it's strange?
I would use the word strange.
Before the Ritva, who said it was strange? I don't remember that the Ritva said it was strange, but it's very possible. But if he did, it wasn't an original statement. Okay. Who earlier than the Ritva said it was strange? Two earlier sources. One who said it might be strange, and the other one who said it was strange. Yeshua, right?
Yeah.
Tosus. Tosus said, is strange or it might be strange?
He said it is strange.
Well, not really. I mean, Tosus really says one particular understanding of it is strange. Right? Which? What do I mean by that? Well, again, we'll go to details in a few minutes. But which Tosus? Which Tosus?
The last Tosus on the page.
Ad negicha revius. But I'm assuming everybody went through the Gemara and Chavtes, through Chavtes and Aleph. If not, then, you know, by Sunday for sure, make sure it's so. So Tosafot doesn't say per se that the connection to Hoche Usha is strange. He says that based on an explanation of the Hava Min of the Gemara, which Ori is going to read for us in just a minute, right? Namely, which idea? What's the problem with the Gemara? Joshua? Yes, one point the Gemara says, well, if you're learning out from Shara Muad, so it shouldn't be 3 years, it should be 4 years, right? So that is very hard to, all the Rishonim struggle, we're going to go through the various readings of that Gemara, because it's very important to understand this whole, you know, thrust. So all the Rishonim struggle, like, why would anybody think that, right? So Tosis has an idea to explain that. What's the idea? Exactly. Just simply, you know, the change in status, you know, per se, takes place. It takes 4 times to be a muad. So it takes 4 years to change the ownership of a piece of kark. The Tosis calls that. Go ahead. Tosis calls that milsa below time. Right. Which is another way of saying it's strange, meaning difficult to comprehend. I don't know, incomprehensible, difficult to comprehend, strange. Pretty much, those are all. But Tosis doesn't think that per se the connection to Hoche Usha is strange. Right, Tosis is pretty, actually, this is very important. It's not just nitpicking. This is pretty important. Tosis thinks it's pretty comfortable with it on the whole, right? Yeah. Would you say? Till that point, Tosis is comfortable. Right, yeah. He implies that it's only Milsa Blataima to go so far with it, right? To change from what he thought was a simple reading of the Gemara. And I will add, just let out the secret already, that if you look at the other Tosasin, if you look at this Tosas, Dir Maschel E, a little bit, especially Ad, which Yoshua is referring to, but also the two Elas. Two Elas? Yeah. The two Elas, and the one that Sam mentioned before, Chav Tesla Medal of Shata Kamaisa. If you put all those Tosin together, all those four or five Tosin together, I would say that there's a pattern in Tosis, and we'll discuss that pattern in just a second. And that pattern is one which Tosis, that pattern in Tosis is one which is consistent with being pretty comfortable with the connection to Hoche Usha. If anything, I would say Tosis's comfort level is almost more significant than the Rishonim who, you know, acknowledge, you know, that it's difficult. Okay. Why is Tosis so comfortable? Okay. So that's, Tosis considers this to be problematic only if you push it in a certain direction, the details of which I'll discuss in like 2 minutes, 5 minutes. Okay. Who's the one who says that the whole thing is just difficult? Although he tries to explain it. Yeah. What's your name? What was the first name?
Ike Levine.
Ike Levine. Okay. The Ramban. Correct. The Ramban starts off. Is that what you were referring to also, or not when you said the Ritva, or did the Ritva also say it's peculiar? I don't remember. What? Uh-huh. But that's, I meant that he does, you know, that he has to give the credit. The Ramban starts off. Do you have language there? Right. It's just an interesting. It's very striking when you read it. And it's particularly important because it sets a certain tone for the Ramban, I think, in sharp, sharp, sharp contrast to Tosis. Get to this in just a minute. Again, if Jesse was up and running, we'd, you know. And I have my pointer now. Let's see if I have my pointer here. Okay. Lo nischaver li, ma inyan zeh lazu. Right? Basically, the Ramban starts off by saying, I don't understand why these two things are connected at all. So that's very important. He goes on to, not to throw up his hand in defeat, but to, you know, to venture a whole explanation, which is very important, and I think mostly pretty consistent in the sugya. And which I think constitutes an important contrast to Tosis, which is easily obscured unless you're looking for it. But once you're looking for it, I think it's clear. So the Ramban is bothered by the very connection to Shor Muad, Tosas seems less bothered by it unless you push it further. Okay, let's continue. Let's just get the Gemara down first, and then we're going to go back and, you know, elaborate on all these things. But go ahead. Yeah, meaning?
If you're going to compare it to Shor Ruah, you should extend it as far as it will go and say that you will not take ownership of the field until the fourth year.
Yeah, and this is what Tosa said. If you're saying this already, that's Milsa below Taima. But in this, the Rishonim agree with Tosas, namely that this is a very challenging question for Havamina. It needs to be understood. How could the Gemara, even if they're connecting to Shor Ruah, how could they think that, you know, the technical details of Shor Ruah, even when they don't seem conceptually to apply to Gimel Shanim, you know, would be determinative? It's a strange thing. You obviously can't say that. You have to try to figure out something. That something probably includes reassessing how Shor Ruah works, which we're going to spend a little bit of time, very, very briefly, just, you know, just in order to better understand the connection to Cheskes Gimel Shanim. We're not learning Bava Kamma here, but you may have to reassess a little bit how Shor Ruah works to understand this, and in order to maintain the parallel. So we'll discuss the details going forward, but clearly this is a very difficult point in the Gemara. Okay, go ahead. So what does that mean? What's the Gemara's answer? Well, the answer is not that difficult to understand. The question was more difficult than the answer. What is the answer, basically?
The answer is that no. Once it gores three times, it already has a shame muad.
Right.
And so if you apply the same thing to a field, once you're there for 3 years, it has a shame.
So just to make it even a little clearer, just so we won't leave everybody completely in the dark. In other words, the Havamina was that the fourth negicha was part of the mechayiv of Shor Ruah. And that itself is strange. I mean, why should that be so? Right. The maskana is that it's not. Namely, you're already a muad after three negichos. The only thing is that, you know, just because you have a, you know, I wouldn't say a gavra, but because it's a behema, but you have a behema, you know, muad, you know, walking around, you know, a behema muad is not a, you know, is not a, you know, a financial, you know, instrument, right? He doesn't owe you something because he happens to be a muad, right? If a muad does an act of negicha, so a muad is chayiv nezek shalei. That's a difficulty. So the maskana of the Gemara is there's nothing about Pam Revius at all that's significant, right? Revius is simply the payoff of the shei muad which already existed after three negichos. Again, we'll talk about the Liyudei Gavra, Liyudei Tura a little bit when we go back to this and summarize all the positions of the Rishonim in more detail. So we'll give this a little more attention because it does have a little bit to do with that question. And Tosas and Rabbeinu Ezra here also on Chav Ches Amud Aleph about four negichos, three negichos. Yes, limud, no limud. What about the fourth, negicha after the third or within the third day, which is what Tosas taught. Well, we'll speak about it a little bit more. But the point is that the maskara of the Gemara seems to be that their fourth negicha has nothing to do with the shame or the mechayiv of muad. It's simply the practical hechatimtzi of when being a muad financially matters. Okay. What was the havamina? It seems that the pam revius, right, is the payoff because the pam revius is part of what constitutes muad. So to explain it like the, based on the language of the Gemara itself, and this is essentially what some of the Rishonim seem to want to say, there are two dinim in Shor Ruah, or maybe more. One is establishing a behema as a nagchan, right? Trying to establish the pattern of the behema's character and behavior, or does this say goring ox, or a placid, friendly ox. So once an ox is gored three times, you know, and overcome the hasra and the shmira, makes it a little bit trickier, right? It isn't just a pattern of goring, but you know there are other elements that go into it, so it has a cheskas nagchan, and that's one thing that's established certainly after three negichos. Question is, a cheskas nagchan is all that you need for being mechayiv nezek shalem and shara muad, or in addition to that, you need that the behema attain a new status. Not only do we know that he's a nagchan, not to be trusted, right? But he has a status of muad, and in order to be chayiv nezek shalem, it isn't enough that he's no longer tam or that he's a nagchan, right? You need him to be a muad, and it's only in that next. So the Havamina of the Gemara seems to have been based on two assumptions. Right? One is that the mechayev of Nezek Shalem isn't simply hafkas, shem tam, or nagchon, but is muad. And secondly, that muad is accomplished only with the fourth negicha. Being a nagchon, or after three negichos, doesn't constitute a shem muad. And this more formal requirement of Nezek Shalem, beyond the pattern of the behema's, you know, behavior, is a necessity for Nezek Shalem. So then the Gemara said, oh, if the shame muad, as opposed to simply cheskas nagchan, is required, or an afkas tam is required, and that's the model for cheskas habatim, cheskas karkos, so then you should also require a fourth year, because it's not enough to, this is the way the Ramban explains it, Michael, go ahead, it's not enough in Cheskas Gimel Shonim, and did you see the Ramban yet?
It's not enough that it's leaving the Rishus Mocher.
It's not enough that you're neutralizing Marakama.
It has to be brought into the Rishus Loket.
Right. This is very, very important. It's a little implicit in the Ramban, or in the Rashi rather, already, but the Ramban really explicates this, and the Ritva and Rabbeinu Yonah kind of run with it. Well, again, we'll go into more detail. But just like in Shora Muad, there are two stages, Hafkas Tam, or establishment of Nagchon, and then Muad. So too, maybe there are two stages in Kvius Cheskas Batim, right? Hafkas Marakama, and Yitziras Cheskas Hamachzik. This is very, very important. In light of this, by the way, we should look at, or relook at, the relationship between Metaltel and Karko, right? One of our, you know, background topics. Like, why is it such a big discrepancy between Karka and Metaltelin? The Ramban highlights for us that there are really two things going on. We need to understand whether everybody agrees that there are two and what the relationship are between the two. But there are two halachic factors here. One is hafkas marakama. The other is, right, kvius, tvisas, or cheskas hamachzik. Those are two different ideas. So again, when we, you know, go back to discussing the relationship between karka and metaltelin, we may want to examine it that way too. What is the status of marakama in metaltelin? Not only what is the status of tvisas hamachzik in metaltelin. I'll explain more fully, but you already get a little bit of the picture. So that was the assumption of the Gemara, and the way the Ramban is reading it. We'll discuss the other Rishonim later. And then the Gemara turns around and says, this is not a problem. So the Gemara could have turned around and said it's not a problem, because in Muad, we don't really need Shem Muad at all. Everything could depend on Cheskas Nagchen, or Afkas Shem Tam, or Choser Shmira. Right? Again, this is a battle that has to be fought, you know, out in Bava Kama, but or that's one way to look at things, and that's the model. And the model here too is Hafkas Marakama, and so on. Right? Or the Gemara could be saying, in Ochanami, we really care about Shem Muad, and that's the paradigm, and maybe even Kvius Chazaka. However, it's just not accurate legally from a Bava Kama point of view to think of the fourth negicha as being indispensable to Shem Muad. It's not. The Shem Muad is already established. The behema, as a status, already has the Shem Muad after three negichos. Why do we have to wait till the fourth? Because as we said, it's not a, you know, there's no tashlumin if there's no maisa nezek. So then the payoff is only going to be, you know, when there's the next maisa hezek. But that's no comparison whatsoever to gimel shanim of chazak. Okay, so that's one way to read. Let's say the simple way to read the Gemara. That's let's continue. Hari. So again, this is a little bit. Well, I don't want to. What do you think about this line?
It's pushing it a little bit further, but it's not as bad as the next one.
Okay, but I mean, let's discuss this one first. So, what do you mean? It's not as bad, but it's a problem or not? I mean, the point is, some of these elameatas are challenging. Like, what does one thing, what does the fact that we learn from Cheskas, we learn Cheskas Gimel Shanim from Hocheyusha, what does that have to do with you do or don't need a Taina in Cheskas Gimel Shanim?
How much are we learning from? Are we simply learning the number 3? Or are we learning...
Well, I wouldn't say that. I mean, let's say we're learning much more than the number 3. I agree with you. If we're only learning the number 3... Then this Gemara is not legible at all, basically. I mean, not comprehensible. Because just if we're only learning the number 3, but the conditions otherwise are totally different, then what does Yesh or any Mataina have to do with Shar Mu'ud? It's true, Shar Mu'ud, there's no Taina. Shar Mu'ud, there's no Taina because it's a Maisa Hezek. And the question is whether or not you're Chayiv for that Maisa Hezek, Nezek, Shalem, or Tam. What kind of animal was it? What kind of Shmira obligation did you have? And so on. Right? The issue of Taina in the context of Shor HaMu'ud simply doesn't exist. There's no analog. So if we were, you know, simply deriving the number 3 per se, then the Gemara would be completely incomprehensible. Because we know that there are many differences between Cheskas Gimel Shanim and Shor HaMu'ud. Right? If the link is a more serious link, we're really learning something significant, right, from this connection, so then you might, we still know that there's no analog of Taina, but maybe that substantive link is something which affects the details of Cheskas Gimel Shanim. Now, if Cheskas Gimel Shanim is halacha type A, so then the requirement of a Taina is, you know, perfectly understandable. If in the models of how you understand Cheskas Gimel Shanim it's type B or C or D, so then why do you even need a Taina? So the derivation from Shor HaMu'ud, right, establishes a certain perspective, certain character of Cheskas Gimel Shanim, and that spills over into the question of Yesh or Ein Taina. That seems to be the assumption of the Gemara. So the Gemara's assumption is that there is a substantive link that we're learning, kind of a just exeris, like blind exeris, like kasuv, or minimal, but there's something about the nature of Cheskas Gimel Shanim that we derive from Hocheyusha, which makes the requirement of Taina either superfluous or indispensable. And here we think it should be superfluous. And what that is, again, we'll leave till we go over it in the detail, but the point is it's a difficult Gemara, because what makes it difficult is the fact that there is no analog, no expected analog. The fact that there's no such analog in Shor HaMu'ud is not problematic at all. We don't know why it should affect, even as a model, to that extent, to that degree. Which is why some Rishonim, again, we'll sum up when we break these down into pieces, some Rishonim pretty much deny almost the Hava Mina. Who pretty much denies the Hava Mina? Yeah? Tosis, correct. Certainly the first day of Tosis. What's Tosis saying the first day of? Mechila. Maybe the Gemara thought that it's based on Cheskas Nagchan, Cheskas Shaskan, and it's based on a kind of Mechila. So then you don't need a Taina. Okay? But it's not because, Sammy, right? That's a good question. We'll get to it. Can you be Mochala Be'en in general, particularly a piece of Karka? What is Mechila? We'll get to that. Maybe that's why Tosis doesn't like it so much. It's one day in Tosis, yeah.
Why? why is Tosos denying that? I mean, and that he's suggesting that it takes 3 years to have a umdan or a rove that the guy was mochel. I mean, it's like a yesh only that. Meaning, after 3 years, we know that the guy was mochel.
Right. No, I'm not saying he's denying the Havana completely. What I'm saying is, in the sense of what I was projecting before, which was, there's a certain view of Tvisa, let's say, or Chazaka, that that we derive from Shor HaMuad, and it's about, let's say, simulating what you have in Metaltalin, let's say, in Karka, but the way that works is derived from Shor HaMuad. And if that's the case, so then why do you even need a taina? It's a very strange question. You need a taina because, put it this way, like the first question of Dalid, the answer of the Gemara seems far more obvious, than the question, to such an extent that you just almost don't understand the question. Let's just read the answer for a second, then. Ari, go ahead. Then I'll... Yeah, I mean, so what is the answer? Of course you need a taina, I mean... Right, meaning, but you can't have a taina because we're talking about a raya here. We're talking about chazaka shel raya. Raya of what? Raya that you are the owner, the proper owner of the karka. Right? How did you become the owner of the karka, if you have no taina? Right? That's a very powerful answer. What was the havamina? Right? What was the Gemara thinking? Even if whatever you say about Cheskes Gimel Shani. So what Tosas did was they kind of reformulated the whole limud from Shor HaMuad. I think Tosas totally the Shitaso. Again, this is consistent with what I said before, and again, we'll elaborate it, but Tosas basically says what you learn from Hochei Usha and from Shor HaMuad is not so much how the Tfisa takes place over a 3-year period, or how your Mafkia, the Cheskes Marakama, or how you're going to create in its place a Mochzakos, because if that were true, then there could be no such Havamina. The Maskana is just so obviously true. Namely, you can't talk about creating a Raya for something. You can have a Raya for a claim, but without a claim, there's no Raya. Right? So in Ted tells us, no, the Havamina was... I may have stated it too forcefully, but this is what I mean. The Havamina was, the whole connection to Hochei Usha is not about creating a Mukzakus or a Tvisa or being Mafkia, a Marakama in the land. It's just about some peripheral method of attaining right to the land or ownership of the land. Right? Through Mechila. That's one answer, Tosis. Inami, what's the second answer tells us? That's one way. In that sense, you're right. It's not a denial of the question, but we'll put it this way: the question provokes Tosas to take a very extreme view of what Cheskes Gimel Shani and its connection to Hochei Usha is. It's totally not what we were talking about in terms of the Ramban and so on. Okay, what's the second answer Tosas? Yeah, Michael?
It is just like a raya, but you have to understand Chazal Kishin and Matayna a little bit differently. That it's it just means there's a break in the link between the Lokeach and the Mocha.
Right, so let's call it, it's a dilution. The Gemara never thought, this is a complete, rejection of this Havamina. The Gemara never really thought that you could get away with a Chazal Kishin and Matayna. The Gemara was saying was how you define taina in this context should be more flexible than you might otherwise say. That's what is the taina of Yeshima taina, right? How much of a taina does it have to be? A vadai? Do I have to say I bought it? Do I have from you? Do I have to say I was there when the person who sold it to me bought it? Right? Do I have to say I wasn't there when he bought it, but I know that Darbo. Chadyoma, like how substantial does the taina have to be? Or can it be, I believe him, right? It could be a more diluted, a more tentative kind of a taina. But there was no havamina that you really don't have a taina. Okay. On the other hand, according to other Rishonim, this is a more problematic issue. What does Rashi say about the Hava Mina? That it's real? Or so you have 2 days in Tosis, right? They're very different from each other. What I'm trying to say is both completely reassess, right? The first one reassesses what we're really learning from Shor HaMuad, Mechila, not Raya. The second basically says there's no Hava Mina, you don't need a Taina. The Hava Mina was that you can get away with a downplayed Taina. Okay. What about Rashi? Jason? Yeah, and what does he emphasize? So this is very interesting, and the Ramban, I think, very much was inspired in his understanding of the Sugya. Again, we've alluded a little bit to it, but we'll hopefully Sunday we'll pin these down completely. I think the Ramban was very much was very much impressed by Rashi. What is Rashi's emphasis, Jason? As opposed to? As opposed to what? What's the contrast here? Ariel? Stephen? Exactly. I think Rashi means to say, oh, if we're learning from Shor HaMuad, right? So the issue is probably not creating a chazaka, it's being mafkia, the status of Marakama. This is not so obvious, but I think this is really what's going on in Rashi. If you look at the Gemara itself, it's interesting, right? The Gemara, when it first portrays Hoche Yusha, has a double formulation. Right, Stephen? Go ahead. When it first formulates the Gemara. That's already a double formulation. Hafkas tamus and yitziras muadus, right? We just don't know. Are those really two things? Are they, you know, two sides of the same coin, and which one drives which? But the language at least is dual. But just one more second. Hachanami, we're going to end in 1 minute. God, Hachanami. That's the double, right? But then when the Gemara goes on. The Gemara emphasizes what? E mashor amuad ad negicha revius lo mechayev achanami ad shenana revius lo kaimei bershusei. Right, so there the Gemara emphasizes creating the chazaka. And then Rashi emphasizes in the next Gemara, when the Gemara asks the question, elam yata chazaka sheni matayna teva chazaka, after all it's about being mafke le mershus mocher. And then the next Rashi also, one over, in the next question, right, Mecha also emphasizes Mafkim Rishus Mocher. I think the Ramban took off on that, those Rashis. Yeah. Right. That's what I'm pointing out. Right. So we'll have to explain what's going on here. But yeah. I mean, and again, as we point, is it about Muad? Is it about Hafkas Tam? Is it about Chetzkas Nagchan? Is it about Hafkas Marakama? Is it about Yitziras Tfisa? Etc. Let's just spend one more minute just running through the Shaka Vatari. Go ahead. Okay, again, problematic. Well, you already indicated that you think this is even more problematic than the previous one, right? Right, why?
Because at least the time has to do with the virus. This doesn't even have to do with...
Right, this is about the Macha, which is the breakup of the Chazak. Till now, we've been comparing Shor HaMuad and Chazaka. All of a sudden, the Gemara throws in Mecha, not Chazaka, but Mecha, which is the opposite of the Chazaka.
Because in the Shor HaMuad case, it's helping to create the Shem Shor HaMuad, but here
it's going to break up the Chazaka, prevent the Chazaka. So that's only one of the problems, but that's like a very basic problem. Again, what's the Gemara talking about? What does Mecha, Befana, Velo, Befana have to do with Shor HaMuad? So again, the Rishonim struggle. On Sunday, we're going to go through each of these in detail. And I'll try to show the pattern for some of the Rishonim and the suggestion across the board. What's really going on? Okay, go ahead. Now, maybe this is what the Gemara answers, maybe it isn't, but go ahead. Hasam.
Hasam, who have you found out to see? Hacha, Kaverta, Kevra, Isle.
Okay. Then the Gemara, again, one more just to finish up. Hoche Usha, Shakvatar, go ahead, Rab Meir.
Rab Meir, the Omar, Lichat, Nikosav, Chaya, Pir, Nikosav, Logoshigin.
Okay, These are the answer. No, you can't do it because there it's one exists when the other doesn't exist. But again, the Hava Amina is very, very strange. Just because Kirev Nigichosav is a, might be a better pattern to establish a Nagchan, does that mean that eating, you know, two apples or, you know, a little bit of grass, you know, and then some other grass? Or again, Michael Goon is not with us this year. We'll have to have another scientific advisor, I guess. Maybe I don't know. Are you a scientific advisor? No. I thought you were looking eager for a moment there. Okay. Anyways, the point is, what does one have to do with the other? What does Kirov Negichosav have to do? How is there any analog to Gimel Shan? Okay. Maybe that's the answer, but go ahead. Here the Gemara actually holds on to the Hava Amina. Go ahead. Hakanami.
Hakanami made him these alive. Here, Lisa, alive. Here, Lisa, alive.
Yeah. So the Gemara says, okay, that's a technicality. Maybe we can still construct a case. Go ahead. Achatlasa Peri.
Achatlasa Peri.
With Tlasa Yom, right. Don't slav.
So us.
Isay, umigmar hu de kagamar the answer,
right?
So again, it's not comparable for technical reasons, but achla. So there he finally found a case where you can't, we have no technical objections. What's the answer? Man. So he says, yeah, in Achanami. The quicker chazaka makes sense according to Hochei Usha. Okay, then the Gemara says, Rabbanan Mai, and then the Gemara has two other explanations, so we'll get back to that on Sunday. Okay, so let's stop here. Just some questions to raise. Sunday, we'll finish just the Shaka Vatar, but I want to go into Hochei Usha in particular. Again, various ways to read according to the Rashi, Ramban, Tosis, Rabbeinu Yonah, the Ritva, how to read the Shaka Vatar, the Gemara, and what comes out of it more specifically.
And then we'll talk about the other two of these Rabbah.